T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Stocks closed sharply lower Friday, giving back some of the gains posted earlier in the week as investors continue to try to price the economic impact of the fast-spreading coronavirus. We also got late word Friday afternoon that the House passed the $2 trillion coronavirus relief package, and the president signed it into law shortly after. The S&P 500 lost 88, the NASDAQ shed 295, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 915 points. Settling to 21,636. I'm Andy Gersher. This is After the Bell. And joining us with the latest on coronavirus, the market, and the global economy, Andrew Bush, former Chief Market Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Andy is also economist at andrewbush.com. Note that Bush is spelled B-U-S-C-H. Also, be sure to search Andrew Bush on YouTube. You'll find a host of videos on the economy and coronavirus. Well, Andy, as mentioned, the relief package cleared the House, and President Trump has now signed the legislation. First question, is it enough to save the economy?
Well, that depends, of course. It depends on how long the shutdown of the U.S. economy continues and how long we see this virus still make a major impact on the U.S. citizens. I think that's the biggest challenge. It's the biggest unknown. What we do know about this package is that it does have tremendous firepower for a number of different groups. I'm thinking of small businesses, and there's about $350 billion worth of loans that that companies are going to be able to access. There's another $500 billion for loans for larger organizations. There's just a lot of things that are contained in this bill. $2 trillion, the total package. Of course, you've got $1,200 going out to individuals with another $500 on top of that. And then you've got extended unemployment benefits. This will get us through about maybe 3 months, maybe. And it really just depends, because we just don't know. To be honest, we've never shut down the U.S. economy in this fashion. So it's just throw whatever playbook you had on, like, how to deal with the financial crisis in 2008. That's helpful, but it really doesn't tell us what to do exactly now.
Well, and another thing that just broke Friday afternoon as well is Trump has invoked the Defense Protection Act. And, right. You know, he's asking General Motors to, you know, start producing ventilators. Kind of explain what this is, and had a little pressure from some governors, including our own Governor Pritzker, to, you know, put this in place quicker. But what does this mean? And I guess my second question is, you know, how do you get GM to all of a sudden make ventilators?
Well, they had already planned to do something with another company to provide a workforce to make the ventilators, right? And so they're retooling, I think, one particular factory. And I think what happened here is that I think the president got upset at GM. Now, I'm just hearing this anecdotally, so I don't have it totally for fact. But I heard that in the negotiations for the price of what they were going to create, someone was asking for more money than they should have. And that's what the president got very upset about, and he invoked this. My understanding, I'm just hearing this from CNN and some other sources, but he invoked the Production Act because he wanted to end that kind of discussion, and he wanted to make sure that this got done without any delay. Now, the president has been very hesitant about using this, and for good reason. Many people believe that this is actually a grab by the federal government of private property. And that's really where you have to be careful. We've only done this during a war. And so, you know, allowing the federal government during an emergency to grab private property initially can be seen as a good thing. But down the road, you got to be very careful with setting the precedent for government to do that, especially if you're an owner of private property. And that's one of our strengths as a country. So balance that out. I mean, this is what we're trying to do as a nation is balance out, you know, do we throw everything that we have at it? Do we lock down the country? Do we try to stop this virus? Or can parts of the country remain open like what they have, what they're doing in Florida, which is county by county, instead of having the entire state like Illinois under a lockdown as far as businesses and non-essential businesses? Florida's done it on a county by county basis. And I think that's a more thoughtful approach to some extent. And we don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I don't see the U.S. being able to lock down its economy for any length of time or worse things will happen.
President Trump is a businessman, and I think he kind of was hesitant about moving on this. And I, too, have seen on CNBC that they were asking a little high price for the ventilators, and that kind of set the president off there. And I can understand him being a businessman where, you know, you let this slide. How much farther do governments start taking control of industry? So, you know, it's one thing if you're a communist dictatorship and you could just kind of do whatever you want with companies and your population. But this is the United States, and it is a delicate right. balance that we that the president and others are having to take right now.
Yeah, and I think that's the balance, right? And so as a an open society, a non-totalitarian society, we don't want to have our government officials to have that type of power. It is the core of what makes the United States fantastic is our civil code and our focus on property rights. And I totally understand everybody out there is going like, who cares, Andy? We're in the middle of a crisis. People are dying. Something's got to get done.
I think a lot of business owners, a lot of people who cover financial markets and business, they should care because this is a big deal.
Yeah, it is. And I people criticize the president for a lot of good reasons, for sure. But in this particular case, I think he's trying to strike that balance, just as the entire nation is trying to strike this balance between the pure horror of what's going on in New York City and in New York versus maybe what's happening in Oklahoma or maybe what's happening in Florida. I mean, you know, the president has been criticized for not shutting down the rest of the economy. And I just take a step back, everybody, and try to think of what that would look like for any length of time and who's already being negatively impacted by this. There is a end at some point to the amount that the federal government can provide to the economy to keep it going during these times. At some point, we have to make some decisions about, you know, have we reached a point where we're past the crisis? Have we reached a point where we've, you know, flattened that curve? The peak is not as bad as it, you know, could have been, and it's more flattening out. It's going to be with us longer. Can we start to open up travel and some other things? So it's very worrisome to me to have people making decisions and criticizing the president for thinking along these lines. I think some of the comments he's made have been more aspirational as far as opening up by Easter. I don't think he would do it unless he had listened to his advisors and felt that that was a good thing. So everybody just kind of keep that in mind when you're watching what's going on in Washington, D.C.
Well, and to be fair to President Trump, he's talking about depending on what the conditions are in particular areas, it's not going to be a blanket policy. And the devastation of the United States being shut down 3-6+ months, the downside of that can get very, very, very ugly, too. So as we've been talking here, it is a balance. And what conditions and things that you apply currently in New York City won't necessarily have to be applied to what's going on in Dubuque, Iowa.
Exactly. And I think that's a wonderful point to make. So I hope we don't go on for as long as what you described. That would be catastrophic as far as I could tell. You know, every major city has bars, restaurants, hotels, convention centers, and all sorts of secondary and tertiary businesses associated with those. And to tell them that they can't open up their businesses, I mean, small business is getting just crushed under this. And they'll have access to some loans from the government, and I think that'll be helpful. But nobody wants that. We want to have these businesses up and running. So it's just brutal on them. And, yes, we have to balance that against people being sick and dying and so on. But, I mean, we've never done this before, but let's keep our minds open about what's potentially possible out there. And just bringing this back to the markets, this week we had an exceptional week where stocks snapped back. We had at one point a 20% rally, and then on Friday we had a sharp sell-off at the end of the day. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're going to see a lot of over the continuing weeks is uncertainty out there over exactly when money's going to get out, when people have access to these loans, when we can reliquify businesses. It's just not going to be a very smooth process.
For those individual investors, individuals out there, maybe not even super active in the stock market, but have the 401k, dabble here and there, what's your advice for them? They have literally seen stocks crumble, and I'm sure their portfolios are feeling the brunt.
Yeah, it has been one of the strangest sell-offs where and strangest. It does follow a pattern, right? So when you're in a crisis, go back to 2008, what ends up happening is people sell what they can, right? Not necessarily what they want to, but what they can. And that's what led to this really strange sell-off between stocks, bonds, and gold at one point. That doesn't normally happen. You know, usually bonds will rally when stocks sell off, but we saw corporate debt get hit extraordinarily well. We saw municipal debt get hurt. But that was until, of course, we had the Federal Reserve step in and say they would buy some corporate debt, they would buy municipal bonds and things like that. So this is a really difficult time to make sense of things. What I would say is the world's going to look very different in 6 to 9 months, for sure, in the United States. There's some things that are going to change. There's some things that aren't. And so what I would say is it's up to each individual investor where you feel that you must have liquidity so that you can pay your bills. But there also, if you've had cash on the sidelines and, you know, didn't participate in the whole Trump rally from the time that he was elected in November of 2016 until February, then you have to ask yourself, okay, where am I comfortable with making a longer term investment in the equity markets? Because this is what we're supposed to do when stocks sell off significantly. To quote the Rothschilds, I mean, they were famous for wanting to buy when there was blood on the streets, and that's a really bad cliche. But that's the mindset of people that buy things when they're cheap, when everybody's selling. And that's kind of the point of investing that's really difficult. I mean, try to go back to the beginning of this week when we saw stocks at their lows on Monday and try buying that at that time. It just didn't feel right. I don't know how anybody got comfortable with that, but indeed, we saw a 20% rally from those lows. So that was absolutely the right thing to do. Long-winded way of saying, take inventory of what you got. Do you have enough to remain liquid for 12 months? If you do, then you start looking at your cash if you've got it to invest and start, you know, maybe on a monthly basis, start putting some money to work.
Looking at the market from a technical standpoint, just want to warn folks, we've had a little bit of a bump off some of the recent lows that have been posted in, but there could still be further downside here. And even from a technical standpoint, it looks like we may go back and retest those levels again from a technical analysis, like almost a double bottom.
Yeah, and I feel bad for a lot of the portfolio managers and other people that, you know, we had a rally of over 20%, right? And so that signals, with quotations around it, a bull market. Well, it would, perhaps, but not in this environment. And so what I thought I saw on Thursday especially was once you got to that 20%, that last hour or so in trading, you saw a lot of volume. I think you got over 50% of the volume occurred in the last hour. And that was people buying. And so you had a rally of, I forget what it was, 1.5% or 1% on top of a 5% rally that was already happening. And I know it's because within their models, once you get to 20%, it's like it tells them to buy. But this is when you have to have management. You have to think, like, what's the risk here? Do I really want to be buying something in this completely unknown environment? And that's where I felt bad today when you saw the bigger sell-off of, you know, down 4% at the end of the day. To your point, Andy, and I think it's a really good one, just because you rally doesn't mean you're got an all clear signal. Just because you get a $2 trillion stimulus plan from Congress means everything's great. It's not. The $2 trillion stimulus plan tells you that Congress is worried enough that things are so bad that they have brought out not only the bazookas, but you name, you know, whatever you want, whatever, you know, artillery that you can probably bring for the economy. They brought it out. That tells you that they're extraordinarily worried about what's happening in the economy as they've shut it down state by state. So just keep that in mind. So I think, could we go back down? Sure. I mean, could we retest some of the lows? It happens frequently when you are in a bear market. You make a low, you get a rally. There are examples of 20% rallies, and then you go right back down. So just keep that in mind.
Well, and it just speaks to how scared they are, because they're actually working together and they actually got something done. Go figure.
They moved at lightning speed. I mean, lightning.
That alone speaks to the seriousness of we're looking at. When you can get both sides to kind of work together on something like this, as you mentioned, pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, the Senate does not move like this. I mean, I've met many senators over the years. They are wonderful individuals, but boy, do they talk forever, and they don't like to move quickly. I mean, the founders set it up that way on purpose. I forget whether it was Adams or Jefferson who said that the Senate is the saucer that cools the coffee of the heat of the moment by the House, right? Something along those lines. I'm torturing the quote. But that's absolutely right. That's the way the Senate is supposed to be. But not in this case. So it's really a testament to our officials, as much as people will disparage them all the time. They moved rapidly and really came up with a very large package. So hats off to them. I mean, it. You know, I know people don't like politicians, and I understand that, but I got to tell you, in times of crisis, this we've really seen as a nation moving forward how fast we can act to help everybody.
And we want to remind everybody, at these lower levels, there is opportunity, and there is a really, 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 really good chance, if you look historically at the stock market and events that have happened over the last 100-plus years, that the market will come back and will retest those highs probably in a matter of years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm struggling with trying to figure out what kind of sell-off this is, right? And you know, I initially was looking at the Nikkei in Japan at 37,000, and then it went down to 8,000. You know, I was trying to think, is the United States like that? I mean, how many policy mistakes did the Japanese make in the 1990s? So I'm thinking to myself, nah, I don't think that's what we've got here in the United States. But is it like the NASDAQ, you know, where we had that massive rally to whatever it was, 4,000, 5,000, sold down to 1,000 essentially, and then now we're back up. So I don't know. And Andy, you make a great point that stocks generally will reestablish an upward trend for their stock prices eventually. They may go sideways for quite some time, like we did in the 70s, but eventually they'll re-engage. And it's just a question of, you know, for each individual investor, you have to make those decisions on, like, what's best for you. Can you stay liquid during these times and survive? But overall, that's why I say, I mean, you know, cost averaging is a great way to look at this. If you're more risk adverse, you want to do less. If you're more risky, if you feel like this is really like a great opportunity, that, you know, opportunity of a lifetime, then put more to work. I mean, it's pretty simple, the way to approach it. The other thing I would add is, just really quickly, is start to think, what does the world going to do? What is it going to look like when we come out of this? Because it's not going to be the same economy that we went back to prior to this virus outbreak. There are going to be significant changes to the way that people operate, the way that they move, the transportation, how people go through that, and what are the companies that are going to benefit? Yes, Zoom's benefiting right now. Yes, 3M's benefiting right now. But what other companies are going to benefit? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Can you use your imagination and think, what at my workplace would change dramatically? Would we be on different shifts? Would we, you know, just go through that? And if you can do that, then you can start to look for companies that may not be in favor right now that you can go, you know what, these guys are going to do great once the wheels of the machine start to catch in the economy. I want to own that company. And I think to your point, you can buy some companies right now, their stocks, and they're really cheap and they're really good companies. So keep that in mind.
That's Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economist at andrewbush.com. Note that Bush is spelled B-U-S-C-H. And I'm Andy Gersher for News Radio on 105.9 FM.